The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome along to William Hill's Racing Podcast. We're going to look ahead to Tuesday's racing on this edition. And Tuesday is, of course, the first day of the 2014 Cheltenham Festival. We're going to look ahead to those races now. We also have racing from Sedgefield and Southwell in the afternoon and an evening fixture from Wolverhampton as well. So plenty to look forward to. My name is Mark Walton, and joining me on the line to look ahead to the action is Catherine Fry. How are you, Catherine?
Yeah, good, thanks, Mark. It's like being a kid on Christmas Eve, isn't it?
It is, yes. I tried not to get too excited in that intro. I literally could have come on and just gone, Cheltenham!
I know, yeah.
But I must try and... I must try and remain something like reserved. But yeah, it's here, and we've been talking about it for weeks and months now, and it's finally here. Cheltenham is here.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's been a noticeable buzz. I was in town on Friday, and you could feel the buzz already. Conditions are. It was so hot here yesterday, Mark. I was actually walking around in a t-shirt. I'd say it's a little more overcast today, but we've had three sort of drying days. We expect definitely tomorrow will go off good to soft. As far sort of really as Thursday, I think the old course was still riding soft, but that has gone now. And I believe that there's even talk of watering midweek, especially I think Thursday we're forecast something like 20 degrees, which would be incredible. It's just amazing that even 2 weeks ago I sort of had a little walk out on the track and was thinking, oh my God, how are we going to do this? But yeah, it's the gods have spoken. It's Cheltenham. The sun is shining.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that we're considering watering after the last few weeks. And a stark contrast to last year as well. I remember getting absolutely drenched on the Friday. On Gold Cup Day last year, so it should
it
be nice.
It was so cold this time last year. This time last year, I was walking the track, and I was out there, and it was something like a minus 12 wind factor, and I thought I'd accidentally stumbled into the Arctic. It was that cold, and it was sleet, and I was thinking, my God, is this actually going to go ahead? It's a little overcast, but a dry day, quite humid. It's not too bad at all.
Good. Yes, it's here. It's going ahead. We have sunshine and, let's get stuck into the racing. Mm-hmm. We're going to go through all seven races on the opening day, and then we're also going to hear from Catherine and get a festival nap or something that she's keen to follow in the rest of the week as well. So let's get straight stuck into the action. The first race of the Cheltenham Festival is, of course, the Supreme Novices Hurdle. It's at 1:30. It's a grade one over 2 miles, and betting is live on site as well for every race on Tuesday. And Irving is the 5-2 market leader. Vator, 3-1. Wicklow Brave, 6s. Gilgamboa is 11-1. With Vanito, Western Boy 14-1, 16 for Jossie's Hill and the Liquidator, and Valsa Lido, and then 20-1 or bigger prices the rest. So Irving has shortened up to 5-2 favourite in recent weeks. He comes here unbeaten, but I have a few reservations and question marks about him, particularly the fact that he's won at tracks like Kempton and Ascot, which are speedier tracks, and going the other way around, of course. How do you think he'll get on at Cheltenham? Do you think he's worthy of a 5-2 market leader?
I personally wouldn't be backing him at 5-2, Mark. My reservations are exactly the same as yours. And also, I know that when he won at Kempton the last time, Nick Schofield said he'd be a better horse on better ground, and yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, from what we've seen, but it is the fact, as you say, it is those tracks like Ascot and Kempton. And also, he's not that fluent. He's a fantastic horse, but he really, really, really isn't that fluent in his jumping. And that has to be a worry when you're coming to a Grade 1 fastly run event at the festival. And at Cheltenham as well. I mean, it's like Cheltenham's like a roller coaster. You know, you need one to catch him out. I personally wouldn't be backing him at 5-2. I've had a bit of a headache with the Supreme, to be honest, Mark. My early season fancy, and to be honest, as soon as he'd sort of crossed the line of the Brave on Bumper in Punchestown last year, I thought, right, the Liquidator is going to win the Supreme. Held that opinion right until the Tolworth at Kempton. And obviously his run was just too bad to be true there. I don't believe anything has ever come to light. People say, I wasn't actually at Kempton that day, but people there saying that he did look very well in the paddock. I mean, it wasn't just the track. I know that David Pipe voiced some reservations beforehand, but I don't think that, you know, he's beaten after two hurdles. It was just a very, very, very bizarre performance. That said, if they have got him back right, I know there was some consideration of would they switch to the county or the Coral Cup. If this horse is back right, then he's fourth in the champion bumper. He won at Punchestown, the Grade One. Easy success in the main hurdle at Carlisle to kick off the season. Facile win at Cheltenham in November. He is so overpriced on what we know of him before. Is he 20-1 with you, Mark?
16-1.
16-1 with you. His price is absolutely outstanding. So when after the liquidator that happened at Kempton, I then obviously switched my attentions to the Tullow Tank. And then obviously the Tullow Tank was ruled out of Cheltenham. Then I started looking at Arctic Fire as a lively outsider. And then obviously the Arctic Fire has now gone to the Coral Cup. I find the Irish novice is very, very hard to split. I think they're all sort of very much in the same mould. I was at Leopardstown when Vitor won, and I was impressed with his accuracy and the slickness of his jumping, but I also think that it was a little bit of a masterclass ride from Ruby Walsh. Whatever about the Tullow Tank that day, he was coming off the back of a few hard races. Not sure that left-handed really does play to his strengths. And a few people that day said that they didn't really feel as though the Tullow Tank was sparkling in the paddock. So taking all that into consideration, was Vitor as sort of impressive as he looked on first glance? A Western boy for Pat Fahey, I think if he was sort of trained by Willie Mullins, he would be a lot shorter than he is in the betting. I know he is quite prominent. So for the first time ever, I don't have a massively strong opinion going into the Spring Novices Hurdle. It's one of my favourite races of the whole season. But I think I will go back to the liquidator just purely because I think on what we know of him, his price is too big.
Okay. The liquidator then, 16-1 currently in the betting. Each way odds a quarter of the first three places as well. So a bit of value there in the opening race of the festival. We'll move on to the second race next, which is the 205. And this is the Racing Post Arkle. A grade one, obviously, over 2 miles. And at the top of the betting for this is Champagne Fever, who is 11-4. Rock and Ruby is 4-1. Dodging Bullet is 9-2. Aziz Trifolium. Valdez 7-1. Grand Away 10s. And 14-1 for Ted Veal, 33-1 or bigger prices. The rest. Who are you siding with in the Arkle?
I'm sticking with Champagne Fever. I was a bit worried mid-season. Again, the minute the Champagne Fever crossed the line in the Supreme, I didn't ever think Champagne Fever could win a Supreme. The fact that he's actually bred to be a staying chaser, he's from the family of like Belmont King, and I've always seen him as a future Gold Cup winner. So for him to win a sort of fast-paced Supreme, I was like, wow, that really is impressive. Obviously, the Arkle was nominated as a future target some way out. I was impressed with him enough on his first run, but obviously he could forgive that. And not really too sure what happened at Leopardstown against Defy Logic. I've gone back and watched it a few times. I don't know whether it's just that they tried to cut each other's throats, completely sort of taken off of his feet. There was some rumour going, it was never confirmed, that he may have burst. I think you can forgive that. Champagne Fever does have a history of putting in a stinker and then absolutely coming back on his next start. We saw it last season in Ireland. A lot of people had written him off. I think when it was either at Naas or Navan, he just ran no sort of race, was found to have a problem, but then absolutely blitzed back to win the Deloitte and then went on to win the Supreme. He's that type of horse. He can throw one in. Was worried after that, but then after seeing the schooling session at Leopardstown, no, I will stick with my original selection. I know it's he's coming here just off two chase starts, but look, we saw Simon Sigg do it last year. A lot of negativity surrounds Dodging Bullets, and I think that's quite unfair. The horse had had his problems. I think he had wind problems. I think he had problems with bursting. Both of those have been put right. He likes Cheltenham. And I think he put up a hell of a fight last time out at Newbury. He has to be in the shake-up. Same goes for the former champion hurdler, Rock on Ruby. People are dismissing the fact of what he beat Lindsay's Dream at Plumpton, only beat Mr. Mole at Doncaster. He can only beat what's put in front of him, and that was the only opposition that was put in front of him. No, it's not, you know, your sort of prep that you would normally see, but there's a saying that goes, the highest rating to hurdler wins the Arkle. Rock on Ruby obviously had his peak over hurdles, had a rating of 170. Champagne Fever had 157. Dodging Bullets 156. On that stat alone, even though Valdez is a vastly improving horse that is coming through the ranks, I don't think he's anywhere near what is required to win an Arkle. I really don't. He certainly is not for me. His highest hurdle rating achieved was 135. I cannot see it. I think the Grade 2 win last time is probably about as good as he is. See, Ted Veal comes here because Mr. Tony Martin isn't very happy with the handicap mark that he was allotted by the English handicapper to go into the Grand Annual. You'd have to be concerned about Grand Jury's jumping. I just hope that horse comes back safe and sound. I think there was definitely some talk on the preview night circuit that his last piece of schooling wasn't very good. It's Champagne Fever. I think bar Rock on Ruby, he's the best horse in the race.
Okay, Champagne Fever then for Catherine in the Arkle. Moving on to the 2:40 next, to the third race, and this is the first handicap of the 2014 Cheltenham Festival. It's the Bailey Singh Harding Affordable Luxury Handicap Chase, a Grade 3 contest and wide open as well. 8-1 co-favourites of 3 with Hadrian's Approach, Holywell and Alfie Sherin topping the betting. Cantlow is 10-1, Green Flag 11s, 16s for Restless Harry, Vintage Star, Time for Rupert, Wrong Turn and Standing Ovation, and then 20-1 or bigger prices the rest. You'll be doing well if you pick the winner of this on just the third race. You'll be well in front.
Yeah, absolutely. I have had a bet in this race, Mark. I thought last week, before Sir Firm went non-runner no bet, I thought they were going too big on a price about a runner in this. Had the nod last week that he was probably going to head here, so I took the 20-1 available on Holywell. I know he's not a natural chaser, but I'm pretty sure that's been worked on after sort of an introductory run at Catterick, and obviously things didn't go according to plan at Wincanton when he unseated 2 wins to his name back at Catterick and at Doncaster. Victor Hugo obviously franked the form last weekend. We saw Holywell storm Cheltenham Hill to win the Potemps last year. Holywell, I think his hurdle rating is something like 158. His chase rating is 145. He's got the blinkers back on. I think now, what price is he with you, Mark?
Holywell is, 8-1 Well, co-favourite.
I know, obviously, his stablemate in here, Alfie Sherin, a former winner of the race. I think, obviously, Alfie Sherin is en route to the Irish National and the Grand National. I'm not sure that he'll get in the Grand National fully. I know it's very, very, very hard to be confident in a 24-runner handicap at Cheltenham, but I'm as confident as I can be that Holywell will take this race. I can't. Obviously, Frutio Rooney was runner-up to Alfie Sherin a few years ago, but the wheels seem to have come off the bus a little bit there. Hadrian's Approach, if that horse could get his landing gear out all the time, I think you'd have to give him a huge shout. So I know he's been talked up a lot for this, and even though he was third in an RSA, I cannot trust his jumping. His jumping is indifferent from one day to another, and at Cheltenham, that just anything that shows any sign of prolonged problems with jumping, I just couldn't have that. I know that's slightly contradictory with me saying that Holywell hasn't looked a natural chaser, but from what we know of the yard and from what we know of Holywell, I'm pretty sure So that has been ironed out. Look, they could have gone the World Hurdle route. They could have gone the four miler, but they've chosen to come here. John Joe obviously loves this race. He won it with Wichita Lyman and Alfie Sharon. I can't see past him, Mark. I really can't.
Okay, Holywell, a strong choice then in the 2:40 on the opening day. The big race of the first day of the festival is the champion hurdle, the first championship race of the 2014 Cheltenham Festival. And Hurricane Fly is the 5-2 market leader. The new one is 11-4. My Tent or Yours and Our Connor both fours. 8-1 for Jeski, 20-1 for Melodic Rendezvous, and then 50-1 or bigger prices the rest. I think I know what you might be tipping here. Go on and state your case for Hurricane Fly. Why is he going to win this one?
Okay, so everyone knows my love for Hurricane Fly. Everyone knows Hurricane Fly's form. I think if you go back to the start of the season, a lot of people, I mean, he went out to 13-2 at one point for the champion hurdle, which, well, I wish I'd got on at that price. His first run back at Punchestown. Now, I wasn't at Punchestown that day, I was at Cheltenham, and I could see on TV screens that Hurricane Fly was as fat as a house, as big as I'd ever seen him. But when Hurricane Fly was sick in 2012, he'd lost a bit of the electric run style that he had. He always has a run style a bit like Bobsworth. It's going to sound obscure. So obviously one's a hurdler, one's a chaser. But they're kind of in the same mould in the fact that they're not anything to look at, but both of them are just amazing horses. Hurricane Fly sticks his neck out a little bit. And in the first run back at Punchestown, people were like, oh, he scrambled home from inferior stablemates. So what? He did it. He still had that run style, and he put in a beautiful leap down the back where he literally stood off outside the wing. That was enough for me to see that the fire was still there. Was nervous going into the Ryan Air Hurdle at Leopardstown at Christmas. I was scared of Jeski. I'd seen Jeski win the Royal Bond. I was scared of Our Connor, obviously, from what we'd seen at Cheltenham the year previously. I just couldn't. I couldn't believe it when Hurricane just kind of dismissed them. I know Our Connor had had an interrupted preparation and might not have been spot on for that. Going forward into the Irish Champion Hurdle, I thought Our Connor had beaten him at one point, and I thought, okay, that's it. The reign of the Fly is over, but look, he doesn't owe me anything. He doesn't owe his connections anything. William Owens has said before they'd had an awful preparation with him. He just wasn't firing, and he actually thought himself that the reign had come to an end. I think the Irish Champion Hurdle, he showed people what I'd always known about him, that the gloves could come off, that he could be a street fighter if he really wanted to. Our Connor has half a length up on him at the last. Fly jumps the last, flat-footed, which is very, very bizarre for him. Our Connor's got a little bit up on him, and Fly just fights and goes past him. Ruby Walsh has got enough momentum going to salute the Leopardstown crowd. I can't see on that performance, and from the noises emanating from the Mullins camp, is that he's absolutely flying. I can't see on that performance how he is going to have any problems in regaining his crown. The champion hurdler in waiting, to me, is Our Connor. I don't think Our Connor will win tomorrow, but I think he will win the 2015 champion hurdler. I think he's just such a talented, straightforward horse. I think he's the biggest danger. I have to, even though the new one would be slightly worried about his jumping, I have to take his Cheltenham record into account. Absolutely loves it round the place. Gets to the bottom of the hill and there's just this burst of speed, this devastating turn of foot up the hill. To me, the biggest dangers are one from his own backyard, Our Connor, and the biggest English danger to me is still the new one. I can't have My Tent or Yours for this. And the reason being, not because I don't respect My Tent or Yours as a racehorse, because I do, because I think round tracks like Kempton and Aintree, he's absolutely fantastic. I do question his will to fight a little bit. I think I'm not saying he's a bridle merchant, but I mean, he travels so sweetly. And you can bet your life he's going to be absolutely swinging away in this. But I honestly think when it comes to a fight, he's going to be the first one crying enough. That's it, Mark. It's not just the heart talking. I'm taking into account the form. It's a shame that for the connections of Melodic Rendezvous that the ground has gone slightly against them, because honestly think, were we looking at soft conditions, you could put Melodic Rendezvous right into that shake-up. Maybe not so much now, but Hurricane Fly, it was always going to be, wasn't it?
Okay, Hurricane Fly for Catherine. I'm going to take you on with our Connor. And just an interesting note about Melodic Rendezvous. You mentioned there that the ground is probably drying up too much for him now. It's a common perception that he wants heavier testing ground. But it was interesting on the William Hill Cheltenham Festival preview the other day that John Frankham thinks that it's just a misunderstood idea that he wants soft ground, and he thinks he'll actually be better on better ground, which is interesting.
I would like to see that. I honestly think that Melodic Rendezvous is slightly overpriced.
Yeah, I think out of the field, he's the one that's overpriced.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, some people are very, very quick. He's a bit like Fly, you know. He has his knockers, and I've never really seen why. And I'd love to see him in the shake-up here. In fact, you know what? If Hurricane can't win this, I'd love to see Melodic Rendezvous win this. Fantastic connections. Jeremy Scott, very, very talented man, and it certainly would be some story. Whatever you think about this race, and whoever you're with, and you know, whoever you're with in your heart, and whoever you've backed, this is the race of the season almost, isn't it?
It is. It's an unbelievable renewal of the Champion Hurdle. It's the most exciting I've ever seen going into the race, and I think it's between this and probably the World Hurdle for the most intriguing races of the festival this year. Anyway, well, we must move on. It's Hurricane Fly for Catherine, then. I'm going to take you on with our Connor.
we'll have one of our match bets on it.
Yeah, if you want, yeah. We'll bring back the match bet just in time. And when you were saying earlier, when you were talking about the race, and you said tomorrow, it's the first time it's actually hit me that it is tomorrow.
Actually, when I said it as well, it just hit me. Like, oh my God, it is tomorrow.
The Champion Hurdle is tomorrow. Nice one. Right, we must move on to the next race, which is the 4 o'clock, and this is the Mare's Hurdle. And there's only one mare we can start with here. Quivega is 4-6 market leader. It's 8-1 for Cockney Sparrow. Serene Dene is 10-1. 12s for Down Ace, and 14-1 or bigger prices the rest. Quivega, she turns up a couple of times a year. She wins at Cheltenham. She wins at Punchestown, and she's going for a 6th win in the race. Can you take her on?
No.
Right, let's move on to the next race.
But I do think this year's renewal is tougher. Look what happened last year. I thought she was beat. I thought she beat the top of the hill, that mistake. And then it was almost reminiscent. It was quite like a strange float back in time to another Mullins-trained mare, like Dawn Run. the way she fought back, you saw Ruby coming into the last, and it was only when she jumped the last that, oh my God, she's going to do it. This is unbelievable. I mean, I think Ruby actually blessed himself as he went across the line. I mean, it was that close, and he actually blamed himself. Now, look, all what we know about Quivega, I don't have to go into a record. Like you say, she turns up twice a year, Cheltenham and Punchestown, and she wins both. The biggest danger is actually a horse that's in double figures, and that's Harry Fry's Highland Retreat. Obviously, Harry Fry has an amazing strike rate. Very, very, very talented young trainer. I'm convinced we'll be champion trainer one day. This Highland Retreat, this mare is totally versatile in regards to the ground. Unbeaten this season. Her win at Ascot, I thought, wow. Like, Carol Spirit comes to her and looks as though she's going to go past her. And she pulls that again on that ground and is game as anything, and actually pricks her ears going across the line. I do think she's a little bit overpriced in this, and I'm actually going to have some kind of reverse forecast Quivega and Highland Retreat. See, Serene Dene, I believe her regular jockey got injured yesterday, so David Cottan takes the ride. Of course, been to Cheltenham before, finished runner-up to Quivega. You have to put her in there. It's a very, very talented mare in there, and Fergal O'Brien's Down Ace. Doyley Cart, I'm actually a bit of a fan of. Ran when Don McCain's horses weren't really firing, and I think you can forgive that run. One I'm not too sure of is Cockney Sparrow. Purely because I think I think the fall last time may have left its mark a little bit, and I'm not too sure about her staying sort of the 2-mile-4 trip. Keep it brief, Mark. Can't see anything beating Quivega, but I do expect Highland Retreat to finish second.
Okay, could be one to look at on the Pro Race card, which will be priced up on the day. We'll have betting without Quivega, so maybe look at Highland Retreat in that, because I imagine it'll be bigger than the 4-6 on offer for Quivega, and pretty much the same result, isn't it, if it goes that way. The 4:40 is the penultimate race on the opening day, and this is the Terry Biddlecombe National Hunt Chase, a listed amateur riders novices chase over 4 miles, and the betting looks like this. Fox Rock is the 11-4 favourite. Shut the Front Door is 3-1. Shotgun Paddy 9-2. Suntiep 9-1. 10-1 for Midnight Prayer. 16s for Rogue Angel. According to Trev is 20-1. And then 25-1 or bigger prices. The rest, one of big prices that has been backed as well is Living Next Door 66-1. Into 40-1 at the time of recording, so a bit of a nibble at bigger odds. But how do you see the 440?
Obviously, Fox Rock has been shouted from the rooftops for this, and it certainly looked ideal. And the whole sort of Katie Walsh taking them out. I don't know if it's too obvious. You know, when something almost seems too much of a good thing. Shut the Front Door, obviously, has been quite heavily backed as well. Was disappointed earlier in the season, but has had a wind up. I don't know about these two favourites. I can totally see the case for them, but then I can also see reasons not to back them. And there's a horse in here that I stupidly didn't back when he was a bigger price earlier in the week. Checked just before I came on air there, and saw he's into about 12s, did you say, Mark? Rogue Angel.
Rogue Angel is... 16-1.
16-1 with you. Okay. And then I would suggest having an each way on Rogue Angel. Would be apps. I'm not going to fall over in shock of either Fox Rock or Shut the Front Door wins. The reason why, he beat Touch the Eden 11 lengths in desperate ground near as Eve at Punchestown over 3 miles. Touch the Eden went on to win 11 lengths at Navan on March the 1st. My one concern would be the run behind Fox Rock last time out was beating 56 lengths. I think the horse is a tiny bit of a head case. Where's the blinkers in this? This horse is reminding me of a horse that Mouse finished... Mouse trained to finish runner-up in this to T for Three in 2012. A horse called Four Commanders, who unfortunately lost his life at Galway sort of something like 7 months later. It just reminds me of that horse. And, I mean, he's got Steve Clements on board. What Steve Clements used to ride, obviously, as a professional over here, won the Grand Annual on the horse I can never say, Mark. We always have this, don't we? Wazoo de Nui. And it just... I just think that's the value in the race. The way he Shut the Front Door, sort of, I know there were reasons, I know there's the wind up, but I just don't know. Obviously, he went off very, very, very hot favourite for the attempts last year, could only finish fourth to a stablemate. There's question marks of whether, is he, even now with this rejuvenated wind, is he the horse that everyone thinks he is? And Fox Rock, is that too much of a good thing? But no, I'm a big fan of the National Hunt Chase, actually, and it just seems weird seeing it run on a Tuesday rather than the opening on Wednesday. I mean, you're pretty much going to get if you do get Fox Rock and Shut the Front Door fighting out, you're pretty much going to get a replay of 2010 with like Katie Walsh and Nina Carberry fighting it out again. But I think Rogue Angel is the each way value here.
Okay, the 5:15 is the final race on the opening day of this year's Cheltenham Festival, and we finish with the Rewards for Racing Novices Handicap Chase, and Pendra is the 6-1 market leader. It's then 15-2 for Many Rivers to Cross. Eric is 8-1 with Present View. Baby Mix and Close House and Boothalazy are both are all 14-1. 16-1 for Art of Logistics, At a Glance and Festive Affair, and then 20-1 or bigger prices the rest. Who do you like for the lucky last on Tuesday then?
I'm going to go for an each way angle again. It doesn't look very likely on paper, but if you look back through the form, you start to get a bit more buoyed, and the fact that horses running first time in a handicap have a very, very decent record in this. That's John O'Neill's Festive Affair. Now, on first glance, obviously, AP has chosen to ride Pendra. Pendra, is it too obvious? Is it a bit like the Cantlow and Collar Squadron of last year? I believe Pendra was once sort of earmarked for an Arkle campaign. I don't know what it is about. You know, when you just don't take to some horses. And Pendra falls into that. I know he's had a lot of time to come back from the Ascot run, but the sort of seventh to Lancetto at Ascot last time out, albeit back in December, doesn't really set me on fire. And when if you go back through the form, I know you've got the second Melodic Rendezvous in the Heavy Ground Tolworth of 2013. I don't know. Is it sort of people alike and the familiar colours and, you know, like I said, are we going back to the Cantlow and the Collar Squadron of last year? Festive Affair, obviously Richie McLennan has chose to ride Dursey Sound, which leaves Mark Walsh on Festive Affair. So that would, on jockey bookings for Jonjo and JP, that obviously looks like third choice. Now, if you go back through Festive Affair's form, he once sort of just got touched off by Mossy Joe at Cork, and he's been on my right. I've had him scribbled down in the notebook ever since then. He then was pulled up at Punchestown behind Salsify last April. His first run here wasn't great. He was pulled up at Bangor when he finished 55 lengths behind Vukovar at Newbury. I just thought, oh, maybe not. Maybe I've got this one sort of completely wrong. Take him off the list. You know, blundered a few. And then I watched him line up at Newbury in the middle of Jan without a penny on him. And he beat Dark Lover by a neck. But I saw that day sort of more of the attitude that I always thought could be there. And he led from start to finish and stayed on. I know it was only a neck, but he was staying on. And his jumping that day was a lot better than I'd seen him jump before. So that, taking all that into account, and I just think that the 16-1 again here is a little bit of value. I don't really have a strong opinion on the race, but the fact that this horse was in my notebook for such a long time, and even though he looks to be sort of overlooked by the stable's first two jockeys, I'm quite happy to take a chance on him at the prices.
Okay, bit of each way value then to finish in the lucky last on the Tuesday. So that's Catherine's selections for Tuesday as well. And before you go, Catherine, let's just hear about the rest of the week from you. If I were to ask you for your best bet for the rest of the week following Tuesday's action, what would you go for?
Morning Assembly in the RSA, John Spirit in the Burn Group Plate, Oscar Whiskey in the JLT, Big Shoe in the cross country.
I was expecting one best bet.
got a few that I'm quite hopeful. I've also had a bit of a big price double. I've had Wahib in the Coral Cup and Neck or Nothing in the bumper, because I think Neck or Nothing's overpriced in the bumper at 25-1. So there's just a few, Mark.
Okay, have a go with those as well. We've had about 16 selections off you on this podcast. We're getting value for money out of this one. Thank you very much anyway, Catherine. Good luck with your picks, and I hope you enjoy the Cheltenham Festival.
Thanks, Mark. You too.
So there you go, the thoughts of Catherine Fry on the opening day of the 2014 at Cheltenham Festival. It's almost here. We'll soon be hearing the Cheltenham Roar as the tapes go up for the Supreme Novices. I can't wait. I'm sure you can't either. And you'll hear all of the action here on William Hill's Racing Radio from 1 p.m. on Tuesday with Mick Norton, John Budden and Gary Capewell in the studio. We'll bring you all of the action from day one of the Cheltenham Festival. There's also racing from Sedgefield and Southwell in the afternoon, and an evening meeting from Wolverhampton as well. So plenty to look forward to. Tune in for all of that. Thank you very much for listening to the William Hill Racing Podcast, and enjoy Tuesday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.